Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. My name is Amber Fulmer.
I'm Dane Phillips.
And I'm Joseph Bias. This week's guests are all South Carolina attorneys and Charleston School of Law graduates. We have Kenny Gardner. Kenny is a graduate of College of Charleston Honors College. He made me make sure to say the honors part. And a Charleston School of Law graduate. He's a member of Butler Snow's Tort, Transportation, and Specialized Litigation Group, where he handles matters involving construction defect litigation, environmental torts, serious personal injury, employment contract disputes, property subrogation, and recovery. It's important to note, Kenny and I are not related, and also I am not Kenny, despite what people have said. Kenny, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. LaRon Washington is a Wofford College graduate, and they Charleston School of Law graduate as well. He spent his entire career fighting for the peoples of South Carolina, first as a law clerk, then as a solicitor, now as an assistant attorney general in the state grand jury insurance fraud department in Columbia, South Carolina. LaRon has the unfortunate distinction of being one of my oldest friends, so it's nice of him to finally join on the podcast late in season three. Welcome, LaRon.
You kidnapped me, much like you did when I was in high school.
Right, right. We'll talk about that story in a second so that I can clear my name, because I think the statute of limitations is over. Finally, we have Nick Lewis. Nick started as a public defender in Dillon, South Carolina. He made it out. He went to the dark side to be a prosecutor, but has now seen the light again and works on the side of justice with the Curry Law Firm in North Charleston, South Carolina. Nick's a University of South Carolina graduate. Charleston School of Law graduate. Nick does criminal defense and personal injury law. Nick, welcome.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me here. As far as that kidnapping charge, I know someone who might can, you know,
represent right,
you
for Nick, that. Nick, I appreciate that. What LaRon is referred to is when he was in high school, and I was a freshman at Wofford, he came to visit the school for what they called a night and day program. And I was so happy to see somebody who kind of sort of looked like me that I didn't let him leave. And I put him in my car and I tried to sell him, give him the hard sell on the school. I drove him around.
I need you, buddy.
And like, I shook his hand like about for 5 minutes. I was like, come on, man. You gotta stay here. And he ended up going to Wofford. So it worked out.
That's what we call a good defense.
Yeah, that's
give us free. You guys heard the words, wouldn't let him leave, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Wouldn't let him leave. That's 0-30. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. I've told them part of this is wanting to get my group text on the podcast. Part of this is actually wanting to hear what y'all have to say, which, you know, I guess. I want to talk about work-life balance because that's nominally the name of this episode. All three of you have kids. We did an episode of the podcast last season dealing with the women's roundtable and kind of how they handled the work-life balance. But you all have the unique perspective of all being married, all having children. I'm going to start with you, Kenny. You do billable hours and just have three kids. The baby just came recently. How do you manage it? What are some tips? How difficult is it to work to manage your home life and your work life?
I mean, it can be very difficult, but you have to make it a priority.
Sure.
And that's the biggest thing is that, you know, the saying is that the law is a jealous mistress and it will take as much time as you give it.
Right.
So you have to work to make sure that you do make time. My dad was in prison for 20 years, so I didn't grow up with a dad. So I know that feeling of loss.
Right.
And so whether you're in prison or you're chained to a desk billing hours, it's kind of the same difference. My children are going to know who I am and what I'm about because I'm going to be around them. One of the best pieces of advice I got was that when I die, my tombstone is not going to say how many hours I billed.
Right.
And so that's how I'm going to live my life. That's not my number one concern. I work to live. I don't live to work.
So in dealing with, because we have a lot of young attorneys and law students who listen to this podcast, how do you manage, like, what's your practical schedule as far as, so, you know, what time are you getting into the office? What time are you leaving? You know, are you working weekends? Are you not? Give us kind of an idea of that for anybody who may not know about it.
Well, first and foremost, unless you have a trial or something huge going on, you probably shouldn't be in the office on the weekend.
Right.
You got to learn to manage your time better. Now, my days start very early. I wake up at 3:30 in the morning. I hit the gym. I come back. I do some work. The kids ready.
If you can't see, Kenny looks. I mean, you're getting swole, man. You know, do your thing, man.
Denzel out there getting rolls. You know,
I'm trying to get a couple rolls too.
You know, I got. This is a career after law.
Right. So 3:30 in the morning.
When I get home, I hang out with the kids. You're
already lost, but go ahead.
I'm tired all of the time.
Go ahead.
I get home, I hang out with the kids. We put them to bed. I hang out with my wife. And then I do a little bit more work. Right. But I use my time during the day very efficiently. And I think if you do that, it makes it easier. But you have it's like working out. You know, you start to develop that muscle, that those habits. They get easier and easier to do.
Yeah, and I can just speak personally. When I first started doing billable hours, you know, it took me a longer time to do everything just because you don't know the little tricks. You're spending time, you know, researching things that maybe later on you don't have to do. So it's definitely, like you said, kind of a learned experience, mm-hmm. where the more you do it, the better you'll be at it. And when you get to the point where you're having a family and having you know, other things outside the office, you have to start learning to prioritize those.
Well, and you got to learn to use your resources. A lot of young lawyers are kind of afraid to talk to other people.
Right.
They're afraid to go get advice from lawyers who have been doing it for much longer than they have. And, you know, I ran the clerk program at my old firm, and I help with the clerk program at this firm. And
sure.
I make sure that I have these discussions and that, you know, law clerks and young lawyers know that they can come talk. Because passing on the information is half the battle. I mean, in the law, you're rarely ever trying to hide the ball.
Right.
And so you don't do that with your colleagues. And so go talk to someone and say, hey, listen, how do you bill efficiently?
Right.
How do you do X? And most lawyers that I've run into, particularly in South Carolina, are more than willing to help you out.
Nick, to kind of bring it to you, you're in a unique situation now because you were working for the government for a while. You were doing the 9-to-5, but now you have clients who are calling you all sorts of hours. You're always expected to be able to answer these calls. How do you manage it? What are some tips for folks on the plaintiff side or the criminal defense side?
I'll tell you, it is becoming an adjustment.
Sure.
It's nothing else like them having my cell phone now. So it's like, okay, you might get a call at 8 o'clock at night.
Right.
I don't recognize this number, but...
but somebody's in jail and needs to get out.
It could be that.
Right.
Or it could be a potential new client.
Sure.
And so I was like, okay, I don't want to lose this money.
It's probably. Could be Navient, too. They call people just for no reason. Right. Say, hey, you still alive, right?
But to piggyback off Kenny, I think, not to sound cliche, but it's about working smarter, not harder.
Okay.
So it has been an adjustment with that. Because, again, you're used to a set schedule for the most part, unless you're in trial. And so now with this, you even in law school, you always want to be flexible, but now you really have to, because again, it could be a situation where I have to be there at 8 o'clock, and then I may have to be there at the end till 6, 7 at night.
Right.
I haven't really had that too much yet, but I have to prepare myself for that.
Is there a difference as in private practice as far as, you know, can you talk a little bit about the difference in expectations on your time after, you know, after hours, on weekends and stuff? Because, again, you mentioned before, work for the government, which we'll get to LaRon and his cushy life. Work for the government, you know, 5 o'clock, you may not have anything after 5. But now that's not the case anymore, right?
Exactly. I mean, the expectation is even during the weekend, there could be someone calling me. I'm thinking about work a lot more now. You just never know. So you just have to be on your guard. Got to stay woke because you just...
Yeah, because you never know.
Yeah.
You always stay awake. I mean, maybe not 3:30 in the morning.
Right. Well, not like Kenny.
But the strange thing is, and this is a habit I had to make myself break, I start we bill in 6-minute increments.
Right.
I started living my life in 6-minute increments. I would be on the phone with my mom. I'm like,
yeah.
Wait a minute, if you don't hurry up with this story, you've already talked to me for 8 minutes.
Right. So you're billing your mom.
You start doing these things that normally you wouldn't do, and it starts to kind of wear on those relationships. And so you have to make it a point to say, okay, I have to unplug.
Yeah.
And I have to be a son, I have to be a husband, I have to be a father, on top of being a lawyer. But
I'll bill my mom. I mean, she knows.
She got a couple invoices she's behind on. She's in arrears.
Look, then I go home for Thanksgiving. She'll cook something. Like, all right, we'll settle it out. It's fine.
Not me. I said, I need them ducats.
So I'm like,
you're my mom.
LaRon, obviously you have the easiest job working to put, you know, the criminals of South Carolina in jail.
That's right.
This is obviously a cushy position that anybody would be willing to have. But I kind of want to talk to you because you're in a different boat where,
yeah.
One, you're working for the government. You have a family as well, mm-hmm. a beautiful mm-hmm. daughter. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about maybe how that's a little bit different, because although I know that you've worked mostly in government, you know, you kind of worked at different levels.
Right, right. So it was different at the solicitor's office because you had trial terms, or really court terms, which usually meant that there were trials somewhere in there. But at the AG's office, you're much more on your kind of own schedule, which means that you had it to yourself. So kind of for all the reasons that y'all said, you know, this is what I have to do as somebody in government. This is what I get to do.
Okay.
So my work-life balance is actually, I don't find it that difficult to do because I go in at 8:30, I make sure I use my time wisely, and then 5 o'clock, I'm done. Unless there's a trial or something like that, but that's going to be relatively rare just because of the nature of the AG's office all around the state. You got to get court time and then give you court time, whatever else. But for me, that was really important. So that's a large reason why I make the conscious decision to stay in government. I get my weekends off. You and I were talking actually the other day how you were saying, man, I don't think I could go on a vacation that was more than a long weekend. And for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm literally counting my leave hours like monthly, like just to make sure. And like, you know, if I ever get sick or, you know, if I want to take a long vacation with my family, I can do that. And that's just something that I value, you know, the weekends off, the baby gets sick, the kids got something at school. Those are things that I get to do. I don't get as many ducats as the rest of y'all, but that's the real balance.
Well, I'm curious about that because, you know, I don't think vacation is something that, you know, I was properly told about when I went into defense work. Because mm-hmm. essentially, I would imagine Nick's the same as you. Yeah, I can take vacation, but they still gonna want those billable hours. Mm-hmm. And maybe that means I'm working harder the week before, the week after, or I'm, you know, but those hours have to be done. Nick, I guess when you take vacation, it's, you know, those are clients that you're missing out on or money that you could be bringing in for the firm.
Pretty much. And kind of like you said, I mean, the week before, you might work an extra 2 hours this day, an extra two the next day, because again, that time's gotta get made up some kind of way. Right. So the client's not going to care. I mean, they're not your friend.
Right.
So it's a business. All they're going to care about is, what are you doing for me? Mm-hmm. And then so with the next client and the next one. So they don't care.
And are you finding, for you and Kenny, and we'll come back to Ron in a sec, are y'all having to make longer term plans? In other words, are you having to say, okay, well, I'm going to plan for a vacation in October and maybe it's June or something because you have to make sure that you don't have any conflicts on your calendar or anything like that?
Definitely. I definitely am. Because even like this week, I was in court, Charleston, you know, Monday, Tuesday. Then yesterday, I was in Georgetown. So, and that was just on the whim. So you just, again, you got to be prepared for the unexpected. So
sure.
Well, a lot of my practice is in federal court. So with the scheduling orders there, you know when stuff is going to happen and when it's due. So you can plan out your schedule a little bit more. But for me, it was kind of a growth thing. When I first started, you know, like you said, you don't really know about taking vacations. And so I'm constantly always worried about not being in the office because you're a young lawyer, you're a young minority lawyer, and you're trying to make it. You're trying to make sure that you are at the same level and in the same league as your colleagues. And so you always have that nervousness about not being there.
Sure.
Because a lot of...
The seat time. Right.
Because a lot of defense firms, you know, making it up that ladder is political. And so, and a lot of that is seat time. They have to know who you are. They have to see you there, see you putting in the work. But, you know, as you start to practice more, and this is probably a good thing and a bad thing, the world is so small now because of technology mm-hmm. that you're not really missing much. So, you know, I've been on vacation where I've worked not as much as I normally work in the office, but I do put in a couple of hours.
Right.
So you can talk to your client, and that's bad because they expect you to be able to talk to them whenever. So you kind of have to balance it and say, okay, these are my boundaries. I'm going to work from, you know, let's say 7 to 10, and then the rest of the day I'm just with my family while I'm on vacation. But it's those things that you have to learn.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've kind of figured out. I took a cruise last year and I paid for the Wi-Fi so that I can be able to send emails and to, but the way I kind of looked at it was, well, this is the best possible way to be working, which is, you know, on a cruise ship looking out, maybe with, you know, a beverage in my hand. And also, you limit the time. Okay, I'm going to do this from 7 to 10 in the morning, and then for the rest of the day, I'm not going to bother with it.
And when we talk about work-life balance, you know, a big aspect of that is mental health.
Sure.
And so, if you're not well, you can't do your job. You cannot serve your clients if you aren't mentally well. And part of being that is unplugging. The firm that I'm at now, Butler Snow, they make you take a sabbatical after, I think it's still like 15 years, sure. But you get a 3-month paid sabbatical.
Wow.
And you can go and then come back and pick up right where you left off.
I'm not going to say what of the people in this room just slid Kitty here's resume. I don't know who this was. But anyway, go keep going.
But, I mean, that's the thing is that you have to be able to unplug. You're not designed just to be a lawyer. You know, I was reading an article the other day about athletes getting injured faster now because they specialize in a sport.
Right.
So you see Julius Randle, who played for the Lakers, break his leg, and it was a stress fracture because all he did was play basketball. And it's the same deal in any profession. Mm-hmm. If that's all you do, you're going to get worn down. And that's no service to you, it's no service to your family, and it's definitely no service to the firm or your client for you to do that. So you have to just make sure that you take care of yourself.
You're right. It is a big reason why lawyers have a high suicide rate. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
What we do is a very stressful job.
Yep.
I mean, thankfully, my wife, she was big on me about getting a hobby.
Right.
So,
and I have an indoor hobby. You run, right?
Love it now. Yep. I run all the time now. My dumb behind is actually going to do a half marathon at the end of the year.
Wow. Good for you, but also, you know, it ain't going to be me.
But it's liberating.
African name after
well, Mbaku. If I don't die. Yeah. It, but I love it. It helps clear your mind, and, you know, it helps separate from the work, and you can go home and be with a clear mind with your family and have time for them, because you don't want to cheat your time with your family, because, you know, they've been in this struggle with you.
Sure.
My wife has been in it from the beginning through law school. Just, you know, start from the bottom. Now I'm here.
Now you're, look, hey, because, you know, something happened. You know, she'll take her cut back. So you better
half.
Half of it. Half.
You're
an investment.
That's right. Look, that's why I'm trying to get like, y'all, I need to get me an investment one day. Anyway, we'll talk about it. We'll figure out. You all have some years in now. I think everybody in this room graduated either 2010 or 2011 from law school. There are a lot of things that we've all picked up, both as, you know, attorneys, but I think maybe just as notably as minority attorneys, maybe tips that when you were younger, you coming out, maybe you didn't know. LaRon, we'll start with you. Is there anything that if you were talking to a student coming out or a young attorney now about practice, about life, about work-life balance, is there any little tip that comes to mind?
I would tell them if you're looking for a job, try to find a commonality. Try to find people who have things in common with you. Like a lot of us are members of fraternities or sororities. You graduate from certain colleges. You're members of certain groups. Try to find those lawyers in those particular niches because people just like to work with people that they have things in common with. Like that's all to it. Like sometimes you can be in the top 10% of your class, be a moot court law review, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, people want to have fun with the folks that they're working with. So if you're looking for a job, that's the advice that I would give you. And I think you mentioned something about a minority in there. But
yeah.
So as far as they go, I would say that you are going to have to be you're going to have to work harder than the guy next to you, I think. That's probably the best advice. I may not even be the best example of that. I probably don't follow my own advice, but to be successful, there's a strong chance that you're going to have to do that. If I walk into a room with a white colleague who looks like, who's, you know, dressed the same thing as me with 10 people, it could be 10 white people, 10 black people, 5 white people, 5 black people. There's a strong chance that at least 9 out of 10 are going to, if asked who's the lawyer, they're going to say the white guy.
Sure.
So for me, like when I'm in the office, I'm almost always wearing like the jacket and maybe the lapel pin.
You look the part.
I got to look the part. I've got to kind of stand out a little bit more. There was the
you got to be fresh,
right? Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I'm looking at you now. You got the fresh
right,
cut.
Exactly.
You got everything.
You
got
to do it. You probably got to work a
twice
little
as good.
You got to be twice as good. Like yeah. That's kind of all to it. So
Nick, what about you?
I'll just kind of speak from my own experience with this. I would not want to limit yourself. When I got out of law school, we were in Charleston. There's a lot of attorneys in Charleston. Mm-hmm. I want to live in Charleston still because I'm from here. But being realistic, I thought there's a chance that I would not get a job here, at least starting off. So I applied everywhere, and I didn't sell myself short on a job just because it was really far away. Because my thought process is, go somewhere, do this job for a couple of years, you can always come back.
Sure.
And all they're going to care at that point is what's in your resume, what kind of experience that you have at that point. So I took a job at Dillon, got hired. The only thing about Dillon I knew was south of the border.
Right.
Couldn't tell you anything else about Dillon. Yeah. Didn't know really where it was at. You just drive by and, oh, these are signs.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did that. Did a few years there. Now I got experience, so it was easier for me to get a job back in Charleston. Sure. So just because you might not get the job you want right away, don't let that sell yourself out. Because you can get back to where you want to be.
Kenny, what about you?
My thought is kind of the other side of the coin to what LaRon was talking about. I think it's important to know those things, but also I think it's important to run your own race. You put a lot of unnecessary stress on yourself trying to compete with others. If you just compete with yourself and you be the best version of you, meaning, because you know when you're doing your best work and when you're not doing your best work. And if you just consistently do your best work, the cream always rises to the top. It might take a little bit longer, but it does. And I'm a firm believer in that. And, you know, you're going to have to work a lot harder.
Right.
But if you do it and not worry about the outside noise, because as a minority, particularly in defense firms in this area, in this part of South Carolina and South Carolina in general, you don't see many of us. There's usually one or two spread out amongst eight offices or, you know, whatever the case might be. So you're not seeing a lot of people who look like you. So if you're constantly worried, because that's already the nature of the machine in defense firms anyways, you're competing to not be the last person on that totem pole.
Right.
So if you can take yourself out of that and just do good work and, you know, you set yourself apart. I think that's my advice is just be yourself, run your race, compare yourself against yourself. You know,
yeah.
I set the standard. So I did the same thing in law school. I mean, there was a lot of, the Black Student Union. Well, you know, he's the smartest Black kid at the school. I was trying to be the smartest kid at the school.
But you were a smart Black kid, though.
I wasn't going to say
it. I mean, your shirt says that, Kenny. I mean, yeah.
Colin Kaepernick. You know, this is greatness.
Wow, Michael Jackson. Okay,
Mike Tyson. Michael Jackson. Michael Phelps. We know all the championships. You know, you might as well just call me Mike.
I really want to do Michael Macho Man impersonation just now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look,
you got to snap into a Slim Jim.
Cream rise to the crop.
Okay. So, anyway. I think my advice, if I were to give something, is kind of maybe similar to Nick. And this is bad in case that anybody who's listening, you know, hires me or wants to hire me. But make sure that you're happy at every stop that you're at. If you are at a job and you aren't happy about it, like, life's too short, man. Like, you get to the point to where you are maximizing your happiness at every job. And that may be, I mean, this profession is difficult, or jobs are difficult, and so there's only maybe a certain level that you can get to. But maximize your happiness and, you know, do things on the side, do things to maximize your impact as a lawyer. Filling a void that we have where, you know, maybe other folks don't have.
You have a desire to help people.
Right.
And so when you feel like you're missing out on that, you don't feel productive. You don't feel like you're contributing. I mean, I know a lot of us got into the practice of law to help people because we grew up in situations where you saw people needed the help. And so when you get, you know, you start practicing. I mean, I wanted to be a lawyer ever since I saw the Cosby episode where they put Theo on trial for telling lies and half-truths.
Sure.
The fat
I don't know burger. If Cosby is the best reference these days.
I'm talking about Huxtable not Cosby. Sure. The show was called Cosby. Right, I'm talking about, you know. And I'm talking
also
about
Claire,
not Bill.
Yeah, so anyway, go ahead.
But that's the thing. I mean, you want to help people, and so you need to find things to feel self-actualized. Because I had the same thing about defending insurance companies. I like the work, but, I mean, you're just trying to keep them money in their pocket.
Right.
And a lot of times the situations are very tragic. And, you know, you still got to do your job.
Yeah, you do your job.
You got to try to feel self-actualized.
Well, in, I know that all of us in some way try and help each other. We try and help people in general. And as two of the members of my fantasy football league, I just want to tell Nick and Laron, I thank you guys so much for your money year after year.
I don't know why I ain't been invited to join this fantasy league. I am the lighter skin of the two other people on the podcast.
This is also kind of true.
So
yeah.
I'm just going to say that. And Joseph, we do kind of favor each other. So maybe, you know, he's trying to be me.
I don't know. First thing, it's not the first time I've heard that. Definitely not the first time. I've been called Columbia Kenny many a time. And so I appreciate that.
I do got to throw you a shout out because you are part of the reason I was able to snag my wife.
Oh God!
Let me tell you. Let me tell you the story.
Because
Laron was in on it. Laron was in.
Tell me how.
Well, it didn't. I wasn't going to bring that up.
Go ahead.
But it has something to do.
Because now he owes you a solid.
Listen, you got an open line to me whenever you need one.
Hey, look, we're gonna talk after this podcast.
I definitely outkicked my coverage when I met my wife and got with my wife because. You know,
shout out to honey.
But
I'm not calling your wife honey. I'm saying that's her name.
Okay, she goes by honey.
Yeah, just in case anybody listens.
We ahead. Ain't gonna fight about it.
No.
So what happened was that your former wife used to go to Charleston School of Law.
So she
thought that I was you initially. So Dana and Laron, of course, said you do look like Joseph. So honey and I posed. As you and your former wife.
Right.
Because I look like you. And honey kind of did. We did the same head turn.
You did.
And everything. And she thought I was funny.
Oh.
And so from that, you know, I was like Flynn.
You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Look.
So you indirectly shot your shot. I shot my shot because of Joseph. I appreciate that.
So, first thing, you're welcome. Second thing, because, I mean, a successful life. You married a lawyer. 3 kids later, you're welcome. Now, I will also say this. This is a podcast for anybody else out there who wants to shoot their shot like Kenny did. Give me a call. Shoot me an email. I'll pose in whatever pitch I need to do to help you shoot your shot. And by the way, not just for men. If you're a woman, you out there, you see somebody else, you want to, I'll shoot your shot with that too. I'll help out.
We are the Splash Brothers. Joseph Bias is the Klay Thompson to my Steph Curry.
Sure.
So I appreciate that because we win chips.
Wait, what that means is that Kenny will win the MVPs, but I'm good for like 30 a quarter sometimes.
I ain't get the MVP. not of the finals. You know what I'm saying? You going to get that.
I mean, you know, just Young Lord of the Year, South Carolina. I'm just, you know, anyway. All right, so anyway.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to let that little fancy football comment slide. I'm still simmering over that, so we're going to deal with that later. I can't really.
We can deal with it later. But since we are recording this, and this episode will come out during fantasy football season, we don't know what's going to happen this year. We've been in the league together 10 years. We've had, this will be the 10th year, we've had 9 years of champions. Nick, how many you have?
No comment.
All right. Laron, how
many
do you
have? Next question.
Okay.
I'm just going to say this. If I don't get invited to the fantasy, y'all don't have my permission to use my voice.
Kenny.
And I'm a lawyer, so I know how to sue.
Kenny, I appreciate that.
I should have won 1 year, though. I should have.
Kenny, I appreciate that. The great poet and philosopher Dave Chappelle once said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 5 out of 9, folks. Anyway. All right,
I know.
This is why I did it at the end of the podcast after I got y'all's good audio content. Then I can make fun of you. All right, we're going to get to our best war stories. We're running short of time, so we'll start with you, Nick. If you have a war story from your time, either private practice, working for the government. I see Laron came in with notes. So he's the only guest to ever come in with notes. I hope everybody heard a page turn on the podcast because Laron Washington of the Attorney General. See, that's the excellence that the Attorney General's office has.
Always
where you
prepared.
Came in prepared. That's Go ahead, Boy Scout. Nick, we'll start with you. Give Laron some time to read his notes.
That's right.
It's
4-page letter.
Best war story.
Man, best war story. I always will remember when I was a prosecutor. Again, if nothing else, I cannot stress, you always got to be prepared for the unexpected. We're, you know, getting ready for a trial. I won't say the people involved because, you know, we've kind of kept it with us. So I'll keep the names withheld. But, you know, you got to meet witnesses and stuff. prepping for the trial. Mm-hmm. So we're out in the country, going, I think in Monk's Corner, and we're looking. It was a murder, and so we were going to where part of a car crash happened, and we're out in these backwoods. And you just kind of know sometimes when you're in a situation where something is about to not go well.
Right.
You still, you know.
Like me before this podcast.
Exactly. And we're, you know, driving, me, the other attorney, and the investigator. We're down this dirt road in the mud. And we get stuck.
Oh, lovely.
No signal on our phones. So we're having to walk back.
This is a horror movie, basically.
Well, yeah. And we're walking back, you know, to the house where our witness is at. And I'm just looking, there's like water right on each side of us. I'm just waiting for like a dead body to float up.
Sure.
Seriously. Thankfully, when we go to find our the witness, because again, we had no service. We had to walk over to their house. By the grace of God, they had a tow truck business. So they were to get our car out.
Yeah.
Wow. And then we actually did an interview, though. You know, and you know, that was a very interesting day. Then we went home and...
That's funny.
Like part of that never happened.
Like it never speak about again. Kenny, what about you?
When I first started practicing, I was fortunate enough to be able to cut my teeth on some plaintiff's work, the Graniteville train derailment. And we had taken a lot of the opt-outs. It was a class action. These people had opted out of the class. And so we had 100-some-odd plaintiffs. And my mentor and one of my favorite people on this entire planet, Cheryl Schaun, who is still at the old firm, she brought me up and she prepped me for this mediation. I go to this meeting and it was very contentious because it was regular blue collar folks against the train company.
Okay.
And the train company was just, no pun intended, trying to run everybody over.
Right.
And they had the money, they had, you know. And so the guy I was representing, he was handling the estate of his mother who had passed. And it was his contention and our contention that the chlorine exposure from the train derailment caused her death. And so he was angry at the train people,
right,
to the point where we thought if they're in the same room, something might happen.
Right.
And so we work, and I work my tail off, and we actually settle it for a pretty good number. And I'm talking to him, and you know, you have to have a good bedside manner. And so you really start to feel with these people and feel for these people. And so we made a connection, but at the end of the call, one time I was at home. He calls my cell phone. I don't even remember how he had my cell phone because I don't generally give it out. And so I go into the other room and I'm talking to him. And at the end of the conversation, he goes, "I love you." And I sit there and there's like an awkward 4 or 5 second pause. And I go, "I love you too." And I get off the phone and my wife comes and she goes, "Who are you talking to?" So, you know.
Dang, we heard the beginning of the relationship and the end of the
relationship. That's right.
That close, one star. All right.
Kenny, we do family law, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Long story short, now. Look,
Don't put that on him. All right.
Exactly.
All right, LaRon. Go ahead, look at your notes.
I'm irresistible, so y'all can say what y'all want to.
There you go.
She outkicked her coverage.
So, now that I think back to it, I think this was actually my very first General Sessions trial that made it to verdict.
Okay.
And, you know, as a prosecutor, you kind of get your war stories from the things that happen to you in trial, the bad verdicts, the not guilty verdicts. So, we had this one case, it was a drug case, and it was a TIA trial in the guy's absence, so this joker didn't even show up for his own trial. Generally, juries are going to hold that against you, even though, you know, they're not allowed, but there's a human nature element to it, and it's just like, you know, I'm sure there's the vast majority of trials and absences are won by the prosecution. So this was a case where there was a, these folks were selling drugs out of a hotel, and then this guy, who was a co-defendant to the main guy we had on trial, he sells weed, from the co-defendant to a guy who was actually an undercover officer.
Okay.
So they catch him, they send it, and they arrest the guy who sells the weed of the co-defendant, and then they send him back in to make a buy from the guy we had on trial. So they go in, he does that, they send him in with documented funds, meaning, you know, got the serial numbers of all the bills and stuff that they sent in. Guy goes in, he buys some marijuana from
The defendant gives him the documented funds. The defendant puts it in his pocket, everything like that. So they're like, okay, we're good. We saw it. It was on video, right. Whatever. They go in. Right, exactly. They go in. They arrest this guy. He's got the documented funds in his pocket. He's got a pocket full of weed. What else? He had... they go in. They interview him. They have a recorded confession. We play all of this for the jury. And he, you know, there were some other guys in the room, but, you know, they talk to him about it. They're like, hey, whose drugs are these? And the defendant says, you know, they're mine, all mine. These guys had nothing else to do with it.
Right.
So, you know, the defense attorney at this point, like, he's in such a bind that his argument is literally, this is too good of a case. Like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, ask yourself, why is this case so good? And I'm sitting there like, what? What am I missing? Like, is that a real defense? So, long story short, the jury comes back after like 2 hours of deliberating, probably even less than that, and they're like, not guilty. And I'm like, what? This is my first trial. I'm like, well, you know, I might as well quit now. Yeah, you know, if I can't win this one, then I can win any of them. So, and the actual, like, the next funny part was the defendant shows up at my office the next day. So he conveniently misses his trial.
Right, but he showed up
the next day
right, for the victory lap. Not guilty. Yeah.
And he's like, hey, man. He's like, oh, I was just trying to see if I could get my cell phone and my money back. I'm like, what? You don't get out of here? That's ridiculous. So he's rubbing it in. This guy's Teflon, whatever. So he's probably still selling drugs.
I want to make a quick note how LaRon said weed and then said marijuana.
Marijuana, right.
He was going in between lingo for those of us. Code switching for those who might be melanin challenged.
I'm just saying, if you're listening to this podcast, we hit everybody, okay? We reach all audiences. I will say, as we close out, one of the best things that, you know, as an attorney, I can give to younger individuals, and this is not just lawyers, but anybody. You know, you have yourself a team. You have somebody, have a group of people who you can call on, have a group of people you can ask questions to, have a group of people that you can joke with, have a group of people that will be there for you and will answer your questions, will forward your resume on to the right folks, that will be the mentors and the support system that you need. Y'all are hearing this episode because these are three of my people. And if you don't have folks like that in your life, get some folks like that in your life, because it makes this practice a lot easier and a lot better. So we thank you so much for listening to the Direct Examination Podcast. You remember, you can always follow us at SC Law Pod on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow me at Joseph P. Bias. You can follow Dane at SC Crim Lawyer and Amber at Red Judicata. I give you these guys information, but one of them work for the government and the other two post stuff that they probably don't want y'all seeing. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you guys for joining us today. And, you know, for our missing co-hosts and for our guests, we will see you next week on the Direct Examination Podcast. Thanks. Boom.